Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We're located on beautiful Vachon Island, Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion, his current events, always laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less. And of course, he always offered a lot more. Our Briefly panel this morning, I'd like to introduce everyone. We've come around the table. We've got our legal eagle, consensus builder, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General and Fulbright Scholar, twice Fulbright Scholar, Mr. Craig Bellis. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Truman. Great to be here.
I'm glad you're here. And our defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, former top secret engineer, Mr. Kevin Jones.
Vote. Today's voting day. Everybody vote.
Today is it. This is it.
Get out and vote.
November 4th.
Vote early and vote often.
Absolutely. Yeah. The more the merrier.
Yes, on Vachon, we always. And that was the voice of Mr. Bruce Hallman, who is a historian, professor, and down under aficionado. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be here.
Our fire commissioner, playwright, executive director. I wrote X on there just to shorten it, and of course that's what he said. Executive director of Vachon Household and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer.
Yes, thank you for that future cast.
There you go. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're running again this year, aren't
you?
Yeah, but you're opposed.
I am. That's right. And yeah. I was just telling Bruce, our household joke is I'm celebrating whether I win or lose. Yeah. I either got some extra free time or I get to continue in service.
I can say is we got Brieflies on the ballot.
Yeah, Brieflies
on the ballot.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
I'm running unopposed, of course, also. That's the way it goes. And I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch at the Gene Bosch.
Good morning.
The Gene Bosch broadcast studio here on beautiful downtown Vachon. And we have a very special guest today. I'm really honored to have with us Captain Joe Wubald. Good morning, Captain Joe.
Good morning, Captain. It is six bells of the forenoon watch as sailors make and keep time. And that's different from my regular time.
It is. Yeah, Captain Joe is one of Voice of Vachon's own. He has his own show. In fact, after this, half hour after this show. But I invited Captain Joe because I think we have a bunch of interesting things to ask you today. So, but before we jump into that, let's go around the table and see what's happening with everybody in the past week or so. Kevin, let's start with you.
Oh, I have way too long a list somehow. It's been a crazy week. For rowing this morning, first of all, on glass flat water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if you find days in the wintertime, you just have to. So I was out for 3 hours on
the
lake today.
Wow, wow.
I just loved every minute of it. Jojo McManus was at the VCA last night, who is a anti-racist and has a book about it. And about 40 people showed up to hear Jojo talk about his life experience. And and the challenges we face moving to an anti-racist community. Also went door knocking for Deb Kay over there in the 26th. We can't vote for her, but I would if I could. She had a cast of amazing political power, Governor Inslee, former Governor Inslee, Lieutenant Governor Heck, I believe.
Yeah.
Lands Commissioner, Dave Up the Grove was there. Some union leadership was there. A lot of people out knocking doors. Turned out to be a sunny day after the huge rainstorm.
Yeah.
Turned out to be a beautiful sunny day. Also, last week, Heroes Talk, number three, with Dr. Hubble. Joe Okamoto was on stage to help introduce that. And, you know, I've heard feedback about, you know, it was really meaningful to hear not only Dr. Hubble's recounting the history, but Joe's perspective on what people should be thinking about as they hear the story. And so the two of them were just fantastic together.
Wow.
And, Rocky Horror. Awesome. My neighbor, actually, was in the play. So I love seeing Kat do her thing on stage.
It was excellent. Excellent. Bruce, how about you?
Well,
a sports week with the World Series. And,
oh, yes.
You know, it was fascinating. I actually ended up rooting for Toronto.
Yeah,
because you really got to know those guys because they beat the Mariners. You know, watched them play seven games against the Mariners. Yeah. So you got to sort of got to know who they were.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Who they are. And then it's sort of like watching them against L.A. And it's sort of like, it's like the old New York Yankees. Everybody likes to see them lose.
Yeah. Right?
And it was a fantastic series. I mean, it just brightened down to the end. It was just incredible. One 18 inning game, it sort of, or 17, whatever it was, and sort of, and the last game went to 12.
Exactly.
It was
an exciting series.
Yeah,
I think quite unusual for a World Series, at least in my book.
Yeah,
I rarely watched them, but boy, I was hooked on the whole
thing.
It was
a good
time.
And then, of course, on Sunday, I mean, the Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, man, are they something?
They are looking good.
They are looking really good.
So it was sort of a sports weekend, sort of punctuated by Halloween.
Indeed.
And my eight-year-old grandson has his birthday on November 1st. So he had a party on Halloween's Eve at his house. Then they all came uptown and trick-or-treated. Everybody came home drenched to the bone.
Of course.
But had bags full of candy and lots of fun. So it was a good weekend.
All right, good. Amy, how about you?
Yeah, I am definitely going to echo a great time to be a fan of sports ball right now. And yeah, that series was amazing. Oof. I mean, I just feel as a baseball fan, man, I mean, to have the Mariners, you know, have the run they had and then have the World Series be what it was. And, you know, we're an LA family originally. And so we have a soft spot in our heart for the Dodgers. And it was, you know, I kind of was like, I hope both teams have a good time, you know. But
you're
definitely
one of those,
right. I was definitely pulling for Toronto, though, you know, because I'm all about the underdog. But yeah, agree. Just watching that, man, that was a gift of baseball this season for sure. And Halloween, I have to say, you know, we sped through town on our way. We went to the Emerald Queen Casino Halloween party. And it was a fantastic time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Three thumbs up for it all the way. You know, they went all out. They had decor. They had this cover band that was bananas. It was like they were covering Michael Jackson. They had like a whole Michael Jackson set where they had this gal actually who was covering, who was great. And then they did like a whole Gloria Estefan and the Sound Machine, Miami Sound Machine set. And it was a jamming band. I mean, they had like 12 people up there, backup dancers, and, you know, like the costumes. I think it was like a $5,000 costume contest.
Wow.
So the costume for nuts. They had a really good one. It was Jack in the Box, but it was Jack Sparrow, the pirate, and his box was like a case of curiosities, right? So he's like wearing this, and then they have this big crypt keeper, and I mean, the costumes were bananas, really good. And then I won $1,000 at the casino.
Yay! All right.
Woo! I was up, I was down. It was very dramatic. At one point, I was very worried about what Aaron was going to say to me when I got back to the room. But I fell into the hole and was like, I'm going to win it back.
And I did. $1,000. All right.
Yeah. So it was a very fun Halloween. Highly recommend. Highly recommend. You know, if after you wrap up, maybe catch the 7:30 boat next year. Yeah. We give it a two thumbs up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for that report.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Greg, how about you?
Yeah. Although I got to ask Amy, what's your game?
Well, I do. You know, it's not even really what I would consider slots anymore.
Oh, right.
You know, like it's just
an electronic game. If you're not pulling the arm.
Yeah, right. Like it's not slots anymore, but you kind of get to figure out like the patterns they want. But I did do some poker, some one draw, some poker.
Right.
Five card draw poker at the bar a little bit. But I finally won, obviously, Luck of the Irish on this like leprechaun rainbow pot of gold machine.
Yeah. Fabulous.
Sorry guys. My arm hit.
No.
Oh,
and we're back.
Sorry. Did you take us back? Did you hit the big red button?
I did hit the big red button. Sorry about that, guys.
You like my earrings?
Yeah.
I do. That's
really
nice.
It was laying here.
Yeah.
It's catching the sunlight for those.
Yeah, glinting.
Very Jack Sparrow.
Yes.
Oh,
there you go.
The other thing, the backup band, was it anywhere as good as the Brieflys?
Obviously not. No, their moves were somewhat basic compared to what we can do.
Now we have to keep upping our game now.
I know.
Well, I know. Next year I want to do, there's this, I've told you about Little Big. I do think Skibbity might be a little much, but I think there's a song called Uno.
Wow.
Go ahead. Google it. Google it on the YouTubes, everyone. Uno by Little Big. That's what I'm throwing down.
All right. That's
we'll
good.
Think about but, it. Okay. In terms of what I ended up doing, Wednesday saw the movie One Battle with DiCaprio and Sean Penn.
Oh.
Wow. What a movie. That was some movie.
Really? Keep
it, yeah. For what it's worth, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 98 or something like that, which is kind of unusual to have that high. Great, really great movie. And then Halloween, of course, went to a Halloween party, probably drank a little too much, and skipped downtown for the first time. I love downtown. I love it. But I wanted to get to the Coop because the Coop had a Tacoma group that's been around for about 20 years, 25 years. Fingertips, the name of the band. Great, great band. So we went there afterwards. And then just mentioned Saturday, Truman and I and the rest of the board had a special board meeting for the Voice of Vashon to try to keep us solvent and keep us all on the air and to, remember us whenever you get an opportunity to donate.
Absolutely.
So I really do appreciate that. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Captain Joe, how was your week? Well, I know how one day was, anyway.
So I am the most fortunate of men, and I had just a great week. And part of it was because some of my people from Stockholm were here staying with me in captain's quarters. And I brought them up here for Halloween. And it was raining sheets. Now, I enjoy rain because to a sailor, that is a freshwater washdown.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it was raining as hard as it was didn't bother me, and it therefore did not bother Professor Reinhard and his son Tim, who were staying with me. So I brought them up here, and Tim dressed as a Ducks fan. And so he was wearing the green and gold, and he had a big numbers on. And I said, well, there's a little bit of a risk at your appearing in the magical Isle of Vashon in Washington State, being a Duck fan. His father, Professor Reinhard, did his undergraduate work in Eugene, the home of anarchy. And so, but Tim is, he is about 6'5".
Wow.
And I was confident that he would be able to manage anything that came along.
Yeah.
They had a wonderful time. And I came in here with Susan and with Dr. Sally Fox. And I was persuaded to put on a costume. And a photograph was taken of that costume, and I have not yet seen it. But it is being alleged in certain unkind circles here on the island that should they ever want to blackmail me, that any of my escapades in my earlier life would not be the candidate, but this photograph would be.
They would pale by comparison.
Liz Shepherd, are you listening?
Yeah.
Aspen Anderson could be breaking news.
So I had to send them back to Stockholm, but we're going to be getting together later on this year. And Dr. Reinhard is working on a book which has to do with the European Union. He knows more about the European Union than just about any American that I know.
Wow.
And he's up to the last chapter, and he has been dogging it. So we had some come-to-the-captain time about getting that finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that when it is finished, we will go to Stockholm and we'll have a book signing party. And I will sit out in front of the bookstore and I will sell and you will sign these books that you are writing.
Perfect.
So that was part of it. And the other part had to do with my Cal 29 Midori. Somebody, unbeknownst to me, because I never lock it.
Yeah.
Locked the padlock, and all of the keys are inside the cabin. And Dr. Hallman here, who is sitting to my left, has said that he would go and take a look and probably unencumber me from that.
That chore. Good. Well, I can tell you, my past week, first of all, of course, I did see Rocky Horror, and it was spectacular. I mean, how many saw it here? Anybody see it besides me? Oh, Kevin. Yeah, Kevin, of course.
I saw you there.
Oh, that's right.
You saw me
there. I did. Yeah. I forgot. Yeah. Well, anyway, it was a really, really excellent production. The voices were great. The costumes were terrific. It was just a great show all around.
Did you pick up on the fact that Rocky, mm-hmm. right, the namesake, was a D1 rower?
I did not
know
that.
A D1 rower is basically, if I recall right, was like high school age qualifying for nationals or something along
Whoa.
Those lines. Yeah.
Whoa.
And you saw Rocky was, you know, pumping some iron there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And not only that, but lifted Dr. Frankenfurter into
Indeed.
The air, which
Indeed.
Is no small feat.
So, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so
wow.
you know, there's all kinds of interesting things that came out of that.
And what's fun is seeing your friends and neighbors up on stage, you know, doing such a great job with him. And the next thing I did... about 2 months ago, I bought tickets for an Irish group that was going to be performing over in Tacoma. And so I thought, you know, if I'm going to go to a show, I ended up getting tickets, I got dinner reservations, and I got a hotel room to stay, you know, so I didn't have to worry about making a ferry. Well, I told my niece and nephew about it, and they said, oh, my gosh, we'd love to see them. So they got signed up, and we all had dinner reservations, and then the show canceled.
Oh.
So we still had the dinner reservations and the hotel reservations. So we said, well, let's just go. And so we all went. We went to McMenamin's, the Elks Temple. Have you folks been to that?
In Tacoma? I've driven by, but...
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is the most amazing place ever. I'm telling you, if I could advertise for those guys, I would. It is.
I think you are right now.
I think I am.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. That it is an amazing place. And my nephew, of course, took me down and showed me the vault. Have you seen the vault? Do you know about that? The vault is a little tiny bar, a little snug, I call them. And there's no signs, no nothing. You just push on the wall, a special place on the wall, and in you go. Oh, it is amazing. Anyway, so that was my time. It was pretty cool.
So all of the McMenamin's... restorations have really turned out well.
Oh, just amazing. Just amazing. I don't know who does their planning and all of that, but boy, they are over the top. Just over the top. So hey, today's election day, as we said, is November 4th. And it's also National Candy Day. Now, I don't know if those two are related or not, but, and I don't know, I thought that the that Halloween was National Candy Day, but I guess it's not. It's today.
I guess the candy manufacturers of America needed to have some other uplifting thing other than Halloween.
Probably. Yeah. And it happened right. And of course, maybe after all the big sales, they need to promote their product,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's the 308th day of 2025, 57 days left remaining, 23 days to Thanksgiving, and 51 to Christmas. Boy, that's coming on quick, for sure. November 4th birthdays, got some kind of cool ones. 1879, Will Rogers was born. 1916, Walter Cronkite. And 1918, Art Carney. Remember him from the Honeymooners?
Right to the moon, Art.
Right to the moon. Yeah, Art Carney. I couldn't believe it. And a more modern 1969 Matthew McConaughey.
So, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Today in history, 1841, the first wagon train arrived in California after a 5.5-month trek, 1,730 miles across the Sierra Nevada from Missouri. That is something.
There's a great story about that. The California and Oregon Trail is it's the same trail until you get somewhere into sort of Wyoming, Colorado,
right.
And then it splits.
Right.
And one trail goes down to California, the other goes to Oregon. And, of course, the story is all the rogues went to California. All the solid farmers went
came
to Oregon,
Oregon,
to the Northwest.
Well, that's probably true.
And so you get the Southern California, Pacific Northwest split, going back into the 1840s.
Well, that's the, you know, that really says it all, doesn't it? Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So, so Truman,
yes.
that distance and time, that's like 6 miles a day.
That's six miles a day.
6 miles a day, yeah.
You making, know, actually, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
quite a lot.
Because some days they probably were like, chill.
Yeah, not going anywhere. Yeah. Wow, that is interesting. Okay, 1845 was the first nationally observed uniform election day in the United States, the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. Then 1845 is when we set that date. I think that's kind of interesting. 1961, University of Washington was founded in Seattle. 1861, did I say 19? 1861.
But we knew.
Yeah. In 1921, I'm not going to be able to say it.
I was waiting on
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, I knew you were. The Stremoulin, whatever it is. Anyways, the brown shirts.
Stroganoff.
There you go. The brown shirts were formed by Adolf Hitler. Now, I find that interesting. It was in 1921, like 12 years before he came to power. So that, I find that very interesting.
It took a while. Yeah.
He was planning from way back.
You got to have your shock troops organized early.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that translate in English to Proud Boys?
It could very well be. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Very close. Yeah. Very close. 1922, Howard Carter discovered the tomb of Tutankhamun, of course, the most famous pharaoh ever, in our day anyway. A couple of more. 1979. 500 Iranian students loyal to the Ayatollah Khomeini stormed the U.S. embassy and took hostages, 90 hostages, and held them for 444 days. You know, that's the political interest there when you had Jimmy Carter trying to make a deal. And then was it Nixon that came in and said, no, just hold off. Hold off on making a deal so I can make the deal. Mm-hmm. Interesting politics there. 2008, speaking of politics, Barack Obama became the first African-American to be elected president, and he was defeating the Republican candidate, of course, John McCain.
And just in case anybody's wondering, that was the largest inauguration in the United States history. just in case, set the record straight.
There you go. Yeah.
And John McCain died today.
No,
on this
day.
Like I said, Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney.
Robo Cheney 3000.
Yeah, Dick Cheney died today.
Cut that out when you edit.
When I edit it. Yeah, I can do that. I can do that. Okay, so hey, we're up to our small talk segment. And like I say, I'm very much honored to have Captain Joe Wobald with us. Most people know Captain Joe here on the island, but if those of you who don't, his listenership, of course, has a pretty good handle on who he is. But Captain Joe, give us a little bio of yourself, especially how you ended up on Vashon.
A short but pithy bio. The counselor just showed me the photograph that was taken at Halloween, and if it shows up on the front page of the Beachcomber, I will know exactly where that happened.
Came from.
And that will end my relationship with the Voice of Vashon. So I originally come from the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I was... I graduated high school with the Christian Brothers in Washington, D.C., and I went into the service at the Coast Guard Academy when I was 17.
Wow.
And I went through the gate there, and I knew that I was in the right place. And it has been true for my entire life that the service has been for me a home. And there are lots of reasons for that, for which we do not have the time. But you particularly, Captain, you in particular asked about how I came to be here on the magical Isle of Vashon. And so there's a big, a lot happened in my life between the time that I started out in the service when I was 17 and the time that I completed the construction of the Shackleton Memorial Library at the University of Cambridge in late 1998. And when I finished that work, Mary R. was ready to come home. And we had lived in Cambridge for 3 years, and she had earned every consideration for that. If I'd been there by myself, I could well still be there. And then a lot of the things that have happened here on the island, of which all of us, each of us here, has been a part in one way or another, would not have happened. But we came back, and we had a home out in Issaquah, out to the east, and we had sold that because they were busy paving over that whole beautiful valley, and we didn't want to go back there. So we didn't have any place to live, and we started looking around. And when I realized that you could only get to the magical Isle of Vashon by ferry, I said to Mary R., that is the place for us. To which she replied, Joseph, not so fast, Buster. So we had to have a few discussions about that. But we ended up buying a house here on the island, which most of you have been to. And it was bought with the idea that it would be the headquarters for a large family, both people to whom we are related by blood and marriage. Mary was Canadian, so I am related by marriage to half of Anglo-Canada. And so our intent was that it would be the headquarters for not only people to whom we were related, but also Captain Joe's people all over the world. And it has turned out to be exactly that. And the story about how we actually selected the house involves a black cat that spoke to me, talked to me, and we don't have time for me to tell that story either. But I have been in four different places in my life where I knew I was in the right place. The first one was the academy and the service. I knew that. And the second place was to go to the University of Cambridge. As soon as I went into the Scott Polar Research Institute for the first time, I knew that I was in the right place. The third place was when we came onto the island, and I realized that you could only get on and off the island by ferry. And the fourth place was the house that we selected, in which I live. And when Mary R. died, and we had a family meeting about what was Dad going to do, I said, we're going to have this conversation one time only. And I'm going to live here for the rest of my life.
Perfect.
And that's how we got here. There's a lot more. There are many more course corrections before we finally settled here. But I am in exactly the right place for me for the rest of my life. And all of you are a part of that.
Indeed.
That's the definition of pithy. You have such a long resume and activities throughout your life, and to be able to summarize that so well.
It was perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
Pithy.
Yes. but I do have a quick question. In that resume, any time on the USCGC Eagle?
Yes. Yes, I trained an Eagle for 4 years. As a cadet at the academy, you are required to train in her. You're required to climb. I was absolutely terrified the first time that I had to do it. And in those days, there were no safety harnesses. You climbed and you held on and you were observing the ancient square rigger rule about one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship. Wow. But yes, I had trained in her for 4 years. And by my first class or senior year, each one of us had qualified as an officer of the deck in her, and she and the type of vessel that handled marine aids to navigation is the only type of Coast Guard cutter that I have not personally commanded.
Wow. So, Captain Joe, before we get into to these questions that we have for you, I wanted to ask you something. You and I are both what I would consider kind of old school captains. I mean,
yes.
we like paper charts. We like calculating our numbers ourselves,
yes.
You know, and not relying on all of the electronics. I mean, but one of the things that came up for me is that as an airline captain, we kind of patterned our relationship on the flight deck with the same as ship's captains.
Mm-hmm.
The captain was in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we discovered over time that did not really totally fit for us because there were occasions when the captain made a mistake and no one was everyone was afraid to say anything, and it led to disaster. So that brought up the program that we call now cockpit, no, it's now called crew resource management, where we talk about, you know, how to speak to each other and how. And one of the things that came up from that is we all know about leadership, but a term that they, I don't know if they're the ones who made it up, but followership, and that what it takes to be a good follower. That you would also give your opinion, you would be willing to share your insights and those things with the captain. And I'm just wondering, has that filtered into the Marine Services at all? I mean, where you have more reliant on your crew members than just your own intuition, as it were?
It is a function more of the command style of each captain. Mm-hmm. Each captain, first of all, command at sea, at least in the Coast Guard and in the Navy, because I've spent a great deal of my time has been under Navy command.
Right.
Vietnam, Antarctica was under Navy command. I've spent a lot of time under Navy command, so I'm familiar with the way and the attitudes. And it's probably the last real autocratic society that we have left in this world.
Hmm.
And it is interesting also in the sense that being an autocratic society, if you are good at it, and I turned out to be pretty good at it. I had my first command when I was 23.
Wow.
I was a very young captain. And I had five more commands after that, so the Coast Guard thought I was pretty good at it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that sail with me thought that I was pretty good at it because I had a lot of people who wanted to come and sail with me again.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a number of people who did, in fact, were able to come back and sail with me. So the answer to your question is not quite so simple as it might appear.
Right.
And there are captains in the military who are legendary for being extremely difficult to go to sea with.
Mm-hmm.
I use an expression, which is that the captain shall show no fear.
Mm.
But I have sailed with a captain before I became a captain myself in my first ship out of the academy. I sailed with a captain who did not live up to that particular rule, and it works its way down to the lowest level in the ship in about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The old man's not got a good grip on it.
Wow.
And we're talking about going to sea in the worst kind of conditions.
Right.
I have survived 2-3 Pacific typhoons and 2 Atlantic hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole business of what you're talking about, though, is that if you're going to be good at it, you also have to have a connection to the people that you're privileged to command.
Yeah.
And that connection comes from learning how to be a follower yourself. And Eagle, Kevin asked me about Eagle. Eagle is the perfect training command for that because that teaches you whether or not that's how you want to make your living.
Exactly.
And it also teaches you that when you're aloft, 150 feet up, and an upperclassman tells you to do something, that's not the time for you to be going over in your mind, are we going to negotiate this out?
Exactly.
If I'm on the bridge in an underway replenishment, and I tell the helmsman a particular order, he's got to trust and believe that I'm telling him the right thing, and he's not going to say, command, sir. So,
but by the same token, though, Captain Joe, I've heard you say many times that a senior chief is the one who trained you.
Yes.
I mean, and it would seem to me that your intuition would be to rely on those people to give you the correct feedback and information that you need to have.
Yes, absolutely.
So you incorporated this CRM, as it were, into your own the way that you did your
job. We just didn't train it that.
Yeah, okay, good.
But I was indeed raised by chief petty officers in my first command, And I learned not only from them, not only many things about seamanship and ship handling, mm-hmm. but what's more to the point, I learned an awful lot about how you take care of your people.
There you go.
So that they will accomplish the mission. So my service reputation was that we did not abort any missions. We accomplished every mission that we were given, and we all came home safe.
There you go. So the first question I had for you has to do with the alleged drug smuggling
yes.
boats. And I know you've been involved in drug interdiction
I have,
before.
Yes.
I'm just curious what your opinion of blasting these guys out of the water is mm-hmm. versus
sure.
probably some of the things you've done.
So the first day that I walked through the gate at the academy, almost the first thing I heard was, you have to go out, but you don't have to come back.
Hmm.
And then we spent 4 years learning how to come back. And we spent 4 years learning how to bring back the people that you were sent out to rescue. Right. So the idea that you indiscriminately and without making a capture kill people mm-hmm. flies in the face of everything that I have learned, everything that I feel personally. I spent a lot of time in the search and rescue business. There are two aspects to this that are very troubling to me. The first one is that we are not absolutely certain that those vessels are indeed what they are purported to be. I don't know what the level of intelligence is that's being used. I no longer get to read intelligence reports. I no longer write operations orders or follow operations orders. So I don't know the answer to that question. The hope is that the intelligence is so good that there is no question but what these people are, what they are supposed to be. But we don't know that. The other part of it is a pragmatic one. That if you are able to capture and to capture the people that are the perpetrators, and you take them to a place where they get debriefed, mm-hmm. you may well learn where this stuff is coming from, and more importantly, where it's going.
Right.
So the other pragmatic thing is that I think that these commanders, are putting themselves at risk for some kind of war crimes.
Well, yeah, so
because
if you're following an illegal yeah. order. Right?
So I can tell you how the Coast Guard does it, because this is what I have done. The way that we do it is that, first of all, the cutters, which are operating in this particular area, carry aircraft. And they carry small boats, and the small boat coxswains are highly trained. The aircraft commanders are highly trained. And when there is a target boat, they launch the aircraft, and they go to kill not the people, but they go to kill the boat.
Hmm.
They go for the engines. Hmm. And the people who ride in the helicopters, who ride in the seat, are highly trained as snipers.
Hmm.
And there are a couple of film clips that have been public which show the combination of the cutter, the small boat, and the aircraft, where they got one of the submarines.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows the boat crew going aboard the submarine and capturing the crew and capturing the submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have everything. You have the people that you know, and they're going to be turned over to law enforcement once you get ashore. They're going to be debriefed by people who are skillful at doing that kind of thing. You've got the boat itself. You've got the cargo. You've got everything, and you've not killed anybody.
Exactly.
So I go back to my experience in Vietnam. In Vietnam, one of the missions of the ship to which I was assigned and which I was XO, second in command, was to interdict the flow of contraband coming down from the north by junks. And we would stop and board all of these junks. We did probably 300 boardings. And but you didn't take anybody down. You captured the boat. You captured the contraband. What I was equally proud of in that over a year deployment was that we did probably 100 village visitations where we did medical care for the people that were in those villages. That's the tradition that I grew up with. That's a tradition that I try to follow today. Well, I know that kind of dragged into, but it covers the points that are really important to me. I don't think you have to kill people. I think that there's a better way to do it, and we know how, and the Coast Guard knows how to do it because we've done it. I think we've done something like 1,000 interdictions of drug boats using the cutter, boat, and aircraft combination. Right. Mm-hmm. Kevin.
So, Captain, you started to answer that question regarding whether or not there was certainty about whether the vote was on a drug-running mission, as the administration would claim. Even if that certainty existed, I assume that you would say this is not the appropriate path.
You're absolutely right. That is what I would say. And there's no question but what the product that these people are delivering is killing thousands and thousands of people and children, young people. And we certainly want to inhibit that. But I know, and if we had the time for me to add it up, I could tell you how many tons of cocaine are on the flight decks of cutters. And I bet you that it is one hell of a lot more than what have been taken out on those boats that have been taken out by drones. And that's how they're doing it. They're doing it with drones, I think. Yeah. I've not read the op orders, so I don't know exactly what the techniques are. But it's all very troublesome to me, and it flies in the face with the whole ideas that I started when I was 17 and try to continue to this day.
If I could just touch upon that real briefly. In my opinion, and obviously, if there's no justification to establish that the individuals on those boats are carrying drugs, you know, then there's no way that blowing up the people in the boats is appropriate. But even if they did have that information, there's been no declaration of war. There's been no congressional activity. Saying that there is war, and in the absence of those two things, the only appropriate word is murder. And I'll leave it at that.
And so in the absence of a Justice Department who would take this issue up, we're left just to wait it out?
That's correct. Okay. That's right. Which brings me to another issue, a related one. You have, I assume, been involved in court proceedings, not personally accused of anything, but maybe as a witness or something on those lines. And those have always been under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, have they not? Do you have an opinion of how the military courts under the Military Court of Military Justice, how that differs from the civilian everyday criminal or civil courts?
So I've been the president, who is the head of a military court-martial. I've been the president in a couple of courts. I have only convened one court-martial in my entire career, and that was a special court-martial, which is the middle level. And that was for a young man who richly deserved to be moved on to other employment. And the defense counsel that was appointed for him came to me and said, Captain, would you be open to a pretrial agreement? And I said, no pretrial agreement. No pretrial agreement. The pretrial agreement would have been that he would avoid brig time. And I said, should he be convicted? And should he be given brig time, I will approve, as the convening authority, I will approve that conviction and I will approve that brig time. And he was convicted, and he went to the Navy brig at Great Lakes, and he was then moved on to civilian life. That was the only court-martial that I convened myself. I have been the president of several of them. And so, first of all, there are no 12. There are the numbers of members of a court are laid out in the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But for a general court that would involve, let's say, some really serious offense, not a capital offense, but some really serious offense, would have maybe 7 members, an odd number. And it does not require that all members agree to convict. So it is done by a majority vote. And the vote, when the vote is taken, it is always starts with the junior man so that he is not influenced by the opinions of his seniors. And the in the Royal Navy, I don't know whether they still do it, but in the Royal Navy, when a court-martial would come and present its findings and the accused would come in, if his sword was pointed toward him, that told him before the reading that he was convicted. Mm. If the hilt was pointed toward him, that said that he was acquitted.
Oh.
So we've never done that. We've never done that in our system. From the other most important part of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for any commanding officer is what is called Article 15, which is the non-judicial punishment. Only the commanding officer can exercise the rights under Article 15. He cannot delegate that to his XO. He cannot say, all right, department heads, you can mete out justice. The commanding officer must do it. And even on the largest carrier, only the commanding officer can hold what's called the mast. And it's called the mast in the Coast Guard and the Navy because in sailing ship days, disciplinary functions were all performed at the foot of the mainmast. And so we still call it the mast today. And it is one of the most precious privileges and rights and responsibilities of any commanding officer is to do that. And that's the way that he handles things like AWOL, missing movement. None of my people ever, almost never miss movement, by the way. They never wanted to miss what we were going to do. God only knows what Captain Joe's adventures are going to take us. The mast is one of the great obligations and privileges of any commanding officer, and only the commanding officer can exercise it. Counselor.
Just, it appears from what you just said that in the military setting, there is no requirement that any of the parties, the panel or the individual who represents the accused, needs to be a lawyer.
Oh, that's not true anymore.
Okay.
The defense counsels especially must be members of the JAG Corps of the service to which they belong. They must be licensed to practice in the state in which the offense takes place. That's particularly true of defense counsels. When I first came into the service, before we had that requirement put into the Uniform Code of Military Justice, a defense counsel could be anybody. And I defended, and I think back on it now, and I defended him very poorly. I defended a young sailor who was accused of manslaughter in a motor vehicle accident. Mm. And the evidence was enough to convict him, but he did not get a very good defense from me, and I was a fresh-caught ensign right out of the academy. Right. I had the obligatory classes by the legal instructors at the academy, but that was all I had.
Wow.
So, but now they must be attorneys, and they also can get a civilian attorney, and there are civilian attorneys who specialize in military law. I have a couple of really good friends who were on active duty in the service. Then when they left the service, they went in to practice military law, and they specialize in defending, especially young sailors who along with their appointed military council.
So linking this question to the previous question, in my mind, we know about illegal orders, and your oath says you're not to follow an illegal order. However, illegal orders undoubtedly get followed from time to time.
Indeed.
Are there consequences? Who bears the consequences? The person who commanded the order or the person who executed the order? Or none of the above?
That's a circumstances situation. So let me tell you how I would approach it, if that would be acceptable to everybody. First of all, I participated in the writing or wrote myself every operations order that I ever had to follow. So I would have made sure that that operations order had legal requirements in it. I've never had to take off my command insignia and put it on the desk of my boss. But I have thought through many times what I would do if I were faced with what I considered to be an illegal order. So, Kevin, the answer to your question is this. First of all, the person who refuses to carry out what they believe to be an illegal order is going to face some searching scrutiny. But he's going to face that searching scrutiny by somebody way up above him. And there are standards of fairness which apply. But he is certainly going to face some consequences, and he almost certainly is going to have to either retire or be sent to ADAC, Alaska. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the person who issued the illegal order is also, because this is going to focus a great deal of attention. So I'm waiting for let's say a destroyer captain to have the balls to take off his command insignia. He wears it on the right-hand side when he's in command. Take it off his blouse, put it on the desk of his boss and say, I am not going to do that. I'm waiting to see what will happen, because it is going to happen, and it's going to happen, I think, fairly quickly.
And again, that applies back to this, the thing we were talking about earlier about taking out the drug boats, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
There is speculation that that submarine involved that very activity, but we just haven't learned about it yet. That the government has been blowing those ships up. But when they captured that submarine, that somebody was given an order to shoot the individuals in that sub, and they refused. So we may learn about that at a later date.
And I also, we're in a period of great turmoil in the military. And if the midterm elections change the political climate dramatically, which I think is quite possible to have happen, and the constitution of the House and the Senate are changed, that there's going to be some pretty close scrutiny to some of these things. Mm-hmm. And I think that the commanders and commanding officers and commanders who have agreed that this is an acceptable way of dealing with the orders that they're given, I think that some of them are going to be in a particularly challenging situation.
Yeah, that really got me to that last question that I had on my list.
And the symptom of all of that is that when you see people like theater commanders retiring early, which we're now beginning to see, that's telling us something. Yeah. Telling me something, anyway. Because I've lived this life my whole life.
Yeah. I mean, Captain Joe, maybe you've had a lot of experience with the Coast Guard. A lot of our listeners may not know much about the Coast Guard other than what they perhaps see on Puget Sound. Could you give us really a quick history? We only have about 5 minutes left, so it'll have to be brief, but sort of an overview the Coast Guard, mm-hmm. And then the changing role of the Coast Guard, and the changing role of Coast Guard men or Coast Guard women, because of course the services have been integrated racially, but they've also been integrated gender wise. Mm-hmm. So, could you give us a quick overview of that?
Mm-hmm. So, on the shield that you see the date 1790, and that is when the Revenue Cutter Service was established by Alexander Hamilton and was codified into law on the 4th of August of 1790 by President Washington. And that was the beginning of the Coast Guard. And then the word Coast Guard actually came in 1915 when the Life Saving Service and the Revenue Cutter Service were put together. And then that happened just before World War One, and in World War One, the Coast Guard losses in what was then the Battle of the Atlantic were more than the U.S. Navy. We suffered losses during that war of convoy escorts that were torpedoed by German U-boats. So 1915 is when the words Coast Guard came in, but the service actually goes back to 1790. I don't quite go back to 1790, Doctor, but
getting close.
But it's getting
yeah.
close.
Yeah.
And so we have always had a search and rescue mission. We have always had, ever since we went into the Arctic, we have had a mission to keep waterways open. That's part of what I did for a good part of my life. And we have always been one of the armed forces of the United States. We've served in every war. The battle streamers that are on our flags are all of the ones that we have earned. And in the period between when there was no Navy, right after the of the ratification of the Constitution, we were the only military force afloat. So when I came in, and I started in 1952, all of those missions were intact, and they remain intact today. The original mission of the Revenue Cutter Service was to interdict smugglers, and we're still doing it almost 250 years later.
Wow.
We have functioned as part of Navy operations. My service in Vietnam was part of that. And I was, for all practical purposes, a naval officer in a naval ship,
yeah.
although we kept flying our own flags. So the changes that have taken place are not particularly significant. Hmm. The missions are much the same now that they were over 200 years ago. And right now, the active duty corps of the Coast Guard is about 48,000 people. It's about the same size as the New York City Police Department. My pride in the privilege of command is complete. The men and women that I've been privileged to command and who are today Captain Joe's people have been one of the things that really has impacted my life and made it so much richer. So the Coast Guard today is as strong as it's ever been. We survive personnel changes. We survive all kinds of inattention on the part of our legislatures as so far as equipment is concerned. And we just keep on carrying on. And we're going to keep on carrying on. 1 minute from the captain.
Captain Joe, this has been absolutely fascinating. I cannot thank you enough for coming in and sharing these insights with us. We've been talking about these drug interdictions and the authoritarian approach that our current administration is taking on, and it's really nice to hear from a military person that what that all means and how it can impact us in the future, and of course. We all saw the 88 commanders or whatever, where that was brought, to be spoken to, And we didn't have time to get into that, but I would be really curious to hear your opinion of that because it struck me as being completely facetious. But anyway, so Captain Joe, again, thanks very, very, very much. I really appreciate it. And Amy, have you got us next week, I believe?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping to have Rachel come in here and talk about Island Center Homes because we have we're getting filled up there and we got some good stuff going on. So I want to talk about newest housing available on the island.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Well, for Kevin, for Captain Joe, for Bruce, for Amy and Craig, this is Truman. We're signing off for now and we'll see you all again next week.